The news this week that a baby born HIV positive may have been cured raises hopes that AIDS might eventually be eliminated in children. It's the latest advance in the more than 30-year fight against the disease. But as an Oscar-nominated documentary points out, the first decade and a half or so of the AIDS crisis was filled with strife. Government and health officials were resistant to investigating the disease. There were frequent difficulties in getting potential AIDS treatments to people desperate to try them. And the process of finding medications that actually worked was frustratingly slow. The documentary How to Survive a Plague tells the story of the gay activist organization ACT UP, short for the AIDS Coalition to Unleash Power. The group organized large-scale protests to pressure agencies like the Food and Drug Administration and National Institutes of Health to streamline procedures for making AIDS drugs available. Here's AIDS activist Garance Frankaruda speaking to the media at an NIH protest.
Things that control NIH research: stupidity, incompetence, and greed. Those are the three major driving forces behind what's going on here and why there are no treatments out there for people living with this disease.
Eventually, AIDS activists were able to become part of the decision-making process, not only of government agencies, but at pharmaceutical companies researching AIDS drugs. David France is the director and co-writer of How to Survive a Plague, and he joins us from the Argo Studios in New York City. David, welcome.
Thanks, Sasha.
And David, before we talk about your documentary, we're very curious to hear your thoughts on this week's news about this possible HIV/AIDS cure in a child.
Well, it was very exciting to think that there was a breakthrough of that kind. I know that there's been some concern about whether or not we know that the child actually had HIV, and there's some open questions still about that particular case. But I know it follows on the heels of one from just a few years ago, a patient that was initially referred to in the literature as the Berlin patient, mm-hmm. an adult male in whom they were also able to eradicate the virus. So it shows that science has been moving in really interesting ways on the cure front and producing some really exciting science.
Today, HIV/AIDS is for most or many people a chronic but manageable illness. But your documentary brings us back to the very early days of the AIDS epidemic when there was this mysterious disease striking primarily gay men, and there was a tremendous amount of fear. Remind our listeners of what that time was like.
It was likely, if you went to the hospital, even in New York City, even in the major cities, that you would be refused care, that you would be refused admission to the hospitals because doctors didn't want to work with such a dangerous and mysterious illness. Hospital staff wouldn't bring food into rooms. Neighbors were burning the houses down of their neighbors who had HIV in their homes. Children with HIV were being refused access to schools. A violent kind of wave of anti-gay crimes took hold by the late 80s that made it unsafe for gay people to walk in most neighborhoods because the backlash was so severe. You know, my film is built from archival footage, images that were shot by activists and artists and independent media types at the time. And what you see in that footage is shocking to modern eyes. The level of disregard for the gay community is stunning. People like Senator Jesse Helms on the floor of the Senate saying with impunity some amazingly awful things about gay people and really washing his hands of any sort of societal responsibility for even entry-level health care issues.
I wish they'd shut their mouths, go to work, and keep their private matters to themselves and get their mentality out of their crotches.
People laugh with shock when they see that on the screen, as though this is just a buffoon who was, you know, saying some marginal stuff. But the truth was, he was a towering figure in the Senate, and he controlled spending.
In your movie, you feature a number of AIDS activists, and one of them is Peter Staley. He's a former Wall Street trader who is HIV positive, and he became an extremely eloquent spokesperson for ACT UP. Here's a little sound of him on the CNN show Crossfire. He was on with conservative Pat Buchanan, and he's saying why he tells young gay men who don't want to get AIDS to use a condom when having sex.
It is Russian roulette to not give people this information when human nature dictates that they're going to go out there and they're going to have sex
anyway. You mean celibacy is impossible?
It's just not going to work. People aren't going to do it, and lots of people are going to die. Now, would you rather have a lot of people cheating on the celibacy with thousands of people dying, or would you rather save those lives and let them have sex?
What he was trying to do, and I think what the activists on the ground were trying to do at the time, was two things. One, to empower the community, to empower individuals, to give them information that they would need in order to be able to stay healthy and stay alive. And the second was to, and it seems absurd to have to say this, but to establish the humanity of people with HIV and the humanity of gay people in general, in the eyes of the general public. The work to establish that community as acceptable was the very first kind of threshold issue that activism had to take up.
Of course, AIDS continues to be a very complicated medical problem, and ACT UP became frustrated at the slow pace of trying to solve that medical problem. So ACT UP wanted to be on boards approving drugs and see what was going on in terms of testing. Tell us about the ways the group injected itself into that process.
Well, they began at first by going to the FDA because they assumed that the FDA was taking much too long to deliberate on new drug applications, or that it was, in fact, refusing to give approval to drugs that were experimental because they thought that they weren't either good enough or they thought that they would somehow endanger the general public. But the first massive demonstration was at the doors of that institution where they said, look, we're going to die anyway. We want to become part of the experiment process. We're willing to take these drugs because they might give us hope.
We are not asking the FDA to release dangerous drugs without safety or efficacy. We are simply asking the FDA to do it quicker.
And they found, for the very first time, you know, some meeting of the minds with people who worked at the FDA. But they found that, in fact, the problem went further up the pipeline, that pharma wasn't researching these drugs, that, in fact, they didn't see a profitable market in AIDS medications, and that they were just not doing anything in the area of development. So what AIDS activism, AIDS treatment activism in particular, started to push was this idea that pharma had to do this, the government had to help them do it, and they brought together people at the NIH with the pharmaceutical heads. Ultimately, they were able to convince the pharmaceutical companies that it would be better for them to deal directly and productively with activists. And they were invited in to sit on those panels, as you described, not just, you know, in deciding how quickly to approve a drug, but they were even there at the table, at the bench, to decide which drugs to study. And at that point, they had become these kind of citizen scientists who are now acknowledged by all sides as having really been the ingredient that made it possible to bring, helping bring scientists to the discovery of the new drugs, which in 96 made it possible to survive an HIV infection.
We're speaking with David France about his documentary, How to Survive a Plague. We'll be talking more with David after a short break. Later in the show, Hugo Chavez's legacy in Latin America. He prided himself on helping the poor and poking the U.S., and he empowered other leftist leaders. Then on Monday, with the spreading legalization of medical and recreational marijuana, we'll be talking with a so-called potrepreneur who tells us why she wants to open a corner store in Washington State that sells marijuana. Back in a minute with more about the movie How to Survive a Plague. This is Here and Now.
Funding for Here and Now comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink technical computing software, accelerating the pace of discovery in engineering and science. Find over 200 job openings at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back.
Plague! 40 million infected people is a f***ing plague. We are in the worst shape we have ever been in.
That's Larry Kramer, the founder of the gay activist organization ACT UP, at a meeting in 1991. We're continuing our conversation with director David France. His film, How to Survive a Plague, was nominated for an Academy Award this year for Best Documentary. The movie follows ACT UP through its protests to bring attention to the growing AIDS health crisis. And it documents how ACT UP members injected themselves into the process of developing drugs to treat the disease. In 1996, the breakthrough that all the activists had been pushing for finally happened. It came when scientists discovered that a regimen of multiple antiviral drugs caused HIV levels to drop drastically in infected patients. The treatment also lessened AIDS-related conditions like Kaposi's sarcoma, which left disfiguring lesions. But David France, because of that breakthrough, many ACT UP members who were HIV positive were suddenly no longer living with an immediate death sentence, and some of them had a hard time handling that news. Let's listen to Greg Bordowitz.
I feel very fortunate, and there's probably a lot of complicated reasons why, but I still find it very difficult to plan for the future and or accept that I will have a long life, which is unfortunate because I've had a long life and I've been living with AIDS for 20 years. But it's hard for me to relax into life.
When the drugs hit in 96, it was a disorienting moment. By that time, a couple of 100,000 dead in the U.S. And if you knew one person who died of AIDS, you likely knew a dozen or two dozen or three dozen. It was hitting communities in such a focused way. And it wasn't really clear initially that the drugs were going to be as effective as they turned out to be. It took another year or year and a half before we started seeing the hospitals just emptying out and people with advanced AIDS suddenly coming back to health. It was a remarkable and joyous time, but it left a lot of people with the task of going about living an ordinary life, which they were not at all prepared for. Having spent 15 years sure they were going to die, making no plans, investing nothing in a career or in their personal lives or in any way preparing themselves for longevity.
Because they thought there would be no future.
They were convinced there would be no future. So many were in debt, extremely in debt. Many had not finished their educations. And now they found themselves 15 years behind other people in their generation in the workforce, and they found themselves overburdened with a huge sum of unprocessed grief. There wasn't enough time between deaths before 1996 to be able to process any of it. And you hear from people from that time about how shocked they were that they had stopped being able to cry. They would go to funerals sometimes two a week, sometimes three a week. There were meetings every Monday of this organization, ACT UP, and at the beginning of those meetings, they were always begun with a recitation of the names of the people who had died since last Monday. And the just the quantity of that emotional challenge was, I think, too much for anybody to really handle or make sense of in that whirlwind of activity at that time. And I think that people are still working on those challenges today.
Some of them said that the work they did with ACT UP was so satisfying in terms of what it accomplished that then they wondered if they could ever find anything as fulfilling to do again.
You have to remember these people were mostly in their 20s, very young men and women, and they found themselves shoulder to shoulder with Nobel Prize winners consulting with them on their work. So they were not just extremely committed, but the work that they were doing was being respected at the highest levels. And then when they were lucky enough to have succeeded and triumphed in the work that they did, you know, where were they then? They were no longer working with those scientists. They were no longer meeting every day with some of the smartest minds in the country and in the world. And it left them wanting. And many of them, unfortunately, suffered a real kind of a post-war syndrome. Some fell into deep depressions, others drug abuse and addiction. And, you know, there are some kind of sad chapters that followed that those years of tremendous triumph.
Near the end of your documentary, Larry Kramer talks about the group's lasting impact. And here's part of what he had to say.
Every single drug that's out there is because of ACT UP. I am convinced. We have the brain power and we have the street power. We have the good cops and the bad cops. The government didn't get us the drugs. No one else got us the drugs. We, ACT UP, got those drugs out there. It is the proudest achievement that the gay population of this world can ever claim.
David, do you think that's true? Is that still the lasting accomplishment?
Of the gay community? Absolutely. The work that AIDS activists did, ACT UP, and other groups across the country who are all working on this, was in the forefront of virology and immunology and really spearheading these areas of science that about which so little was known at the beginning of the epidemic. And as total outsiders, they reorganized the NIH, the way the National Institutes of Health is structured, the way money is spent there, the way money is tracked, the way drug trials are identified and designed. And they took a system of science that was academic and hidebound and made it into a moral practice. And that's immense. And the legacy that is left from that is something that everybody benefits from. Every day, the transformations that were put into place by ACT UP are benefiting people. And that's amazing. And you could compare it to, you know, the gay marriage movement, which has been culturally very transformative, but it hasn't changed the world in the way that this period of grassroots activism did.
David France is the director and co-writer of How to Survive a Plague. David, thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Monday on the show, picking a new pope. We'll get an update from Rome. News is next, here and now.